history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, the stories that are there, so often untold, are worth the time it takes for us to listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service and their sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so the rest of us never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, the perspective we pick up is oh so powerful. We're educated, we're entertained, and often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Hometown Heroes has never been and never will be a political program. The personal views of the veterans you hear on this show can range from the far left to the far right and everything in between. And they all realize that that's part of what they were fighting for so many years ago, the freedom to express those views. They also know, and boy have they made this point clear over the years, that perhaps the most crucial factor in America leading the Allies to victory in World War II and the defeat of tyrannical forces that sought to dominate the globe was the incredible unity that coalesced behind that effort. It wasn't that political differences and disagreements didn't exist. It was that our country had been attacked and its very ideals and existence were in jeopardy. So 16 million Americans ended up in uniform, millions more, men, women, and children supporting them in any way they could back home until that victory was finally achieved 75 years ago. I'm emphasizing that up front this week because so much of the national discussion this week has centered around a presidential debate that was not our finest moment. We can all see and feel the division and the rancor. It bombards us every day. And sometimes we may feel helpless to do anything about it. But one thing we can do is focus on more uplifting examples to emulate. And when I learned this week of the passing of two of the veterans we've met on this show, two men whose stories really underscore how fragile life can be and whose legacies reflect courage, sacrifice, and selflessness, those are the characteristics that our nation exemplified during World War II. And at other times in our history. And perhaps it becomes easier for the rest of us to follow that example when we take some time to soak it up. So that's what we're going to do this week, starting with some of the memories of Ralph Thiessen, who just finished his race at the age of 95. His father had served in World War I, and Ralph, the fourth of 10 children, would be one of six brothers to serve in our armed forces. Here's what he recalled about December 7th, 1941, in Chowchilla, California.
Well, we were playing basketball, practicing.
So someone came in the gym and told you what happened, or what?
No, I heard it at home, and I had to take my brother. He was hitchhiking to Fresno, going to school at Fresno State.
Was that shocking news? Did you understand what had happened or what it was going to mean?
Yeah, I hadn't realized what was happening. Although I didn't know here about Hawaii too much until then.
Yeah, it wasn't even a state yet.
No.
How did you see life changing after that?
Well, I decided I wanted to go into the Navy, and a good friend of mine in high school was Tom Begley. Tom and I went into service. Tom went to the Marines, and I went to the Navy, and I boarded the Saratoga in Bremerton, Washington. And one day in the dining line, Tom was way in the back, and I turned around, and I said, well, it sure looks like Tom Begley. So I went back, and it was. And I didn't expect him. I thought he just came aboard because some come on and just help or got fired. They got a fire signature that you take when somebody's welding or something like that. And so I had Tom come to dinner with me and Sarah, and we started talking about old times. And I'd go up there and visit him, and the Marines are brilliant, really nice. I enjoyed being around them.
And so everybody understands. So you and Tom in high school were pretty close,
mm-hmm.
But you're in the Navy. He's in the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to a lot of guys. I mean, I've talked to a lot of guys who went to sign up together with the hopes that, hey, if I sign up with my buddies, we're all going to go to the same place. We'll get mm-hmm. to be in the war together. And it never worked out that way for him. And here you go in the Navy, he goes in the Marines, and you end up on the same ship?
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible?
I don't know. His sister was glad that we were together.
Yeah, what do you need to tell me about his sister?
Well, she was a school teacher. Very lovable person. I dated her for quite a few years. She was a Baptist, I was Catholic, so didn't work out.
But she thought highly of you. So when you're heading off to sea, she was writing you letters and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
And then her brother, your buddy Tom, ends up on the same ship as you, just one of a handful of Marines on this giant carrier with a ton of sailors.
Mm-hmm.
That had to be a kind of a mind-blowing moment when you see him in that line.
I did. Oh, I was in line when I seen him back there.
Yeah?
I motioned him to come have lunch with us. He did. But I thought maybe he was just coming in for a work detail because we did have Marines come in for that. Mm. So it's nice. I'm going to be stationed aboard the Sarah.
And let's talk about the Sarah. So the Saratoga was a very historic aircraft carrier. I mean, and some people don't realize that in the breadth of World War II, from 41 to 45, the carriers at the start of the war were a far cry from the carriers they were bringing in at the end of the war.
Well, the Saratoga was carrier number three. We did a lot of, over in Hawaii, we trained a lot of pilots there because it was a big carrier. And I had seen a couple of guys go on a drink, but they got out all right. The ships that we did, they wouldn't anchor us together because we get in a fight once in a while with the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time when we docked and they had us all go stand in line to get our maneuver out in this town. And we got together and had to kind of protect each other. Because we're pretty sure there'd be some fights otherwise.
So the guys from the Big E didn't like the guys from the Sarah?
My first of two.
Uh-huh. Well, good thing you both decided you were fighting the Japanese and not each other.
Right.
Both of those ships had quite a history.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about your duties.
I was a water king, which is something that not too many guys in the Navy know about. Mm-hmm. I kept track of the ship's water. And when I left the boiler room, that's where I went. I left the soundings back of the boiler. If the smoke was coming out of the smokestack, I'd be up on top and watching it. I'd have to tell the boilers down below that they're smoking to clear it up.
If general quarters ever sounded, what would you have to do?
I was to go down to this machine area, and we had our pumps down there to put out the fires, wherever they are, and I run that pump. Probably on that one time when we got hit by the Japanese kamikazes.
Five kamikazes on the same day, causing great loss of life, including the life of your friend Tom.
A casual observer might say, hey, if you're going to be in the Marine Corps in World War II, you're probably a lot safer being on an aircraft carrier than storming the beaches at Tarawa or Iwo Jima or Okinawa or something like
right.
that. But that's not how it worked out for him.
No, it didn't.
And he had some kind of premonition of this?
He did. We went to an island called Ulithi, and there was a large number of ships out there. I mean, there's probably a couple thousand.
Right.
And so we took off from there. We went to Japan and hit Japan for a couple of days, and then we went to Iwo Jima.
As this is going on, Tom is expressing to you that he doesn't think he's ever going to make it back home?
And that's what he did. We were on the gun mount, and he's talking, and he said, I'm not coming home. I said, what? And I'm surprised him telling me that. I told him, I just said, Tom, are you going home? I said, no. So he said, tell my parents I love them. And my sisters, he had two sisters. I love them also. That was it.
And had you guys encountered kamikaze attacks before?
No, that's the first one.
So tell me about that day. How did that unfold for you?
Well, we went in lockdown, and the next morning I got up and I said, I got to go to the Marine Corps. I heard some of the Marines had gotten killed. So I went up to his apartment, and the Marine up there told me he knew I was a friend of Tom's. He said, Tom didn't make it. And I couldn't believe it.
If there's more you want to say about that, I don't want to stop you. But tell me about the attack itself. How many kamikazes attacked the Saratoga, and where were you while that was going on?
I was down in the room running the pumps if I had to.
So general quarters sounded, you knew you were under attack?
Right.
So you're down there waiting for orders of...
Yeah, one of them run the pumps when we put the fires out and start putting bodies on the flight deck where there's space to bury them at sea.
I'm just reading what you and your wife put together here. The Japanese attack began with fighter planes and kamikaze planes coming through the low cloud cover, and the insufficient escorts made the Saratoga a vulnerable target. After 3 hours and 17 minutes of fighting, 25 to 30 incoming planes, 7 bombs, and 5 kamikazes hit the ship. And this says, the old lady quivered from stem to stern as the flight deck and hull absorbed the beating. 7 bombs and 5 kamikazes. I mean, I've talked to guys where one kamikaze hit them, and it hit them in the right spot, and that was enough.
All right.
So you're in the fire room on the port side of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the fire room on the starboard side of the ship?
Well, they got hit. It was the fire room 7. There's a few of them killed there. In fact, they put these 3 bodies on the hangar deck and covered them up. And I did look at them. Somebody pulled the sheets back. And one was the chief, and I don't know what the other guys were.
But if you had been in that fire room,
I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. So basically the identical station on the other side of the ship is taken out. And this damage from all those bombs and the kamikazes, it's 7 bombs and 5 kamikazes. That's a lot of damage. Did you go topside and see that damage, see what had happened to your ship?
Not at the time, no. I see them pictured, but I didn't go up there. In fact, after the battle, I was washing blood off the air intake.
How'd the blood get there?
Some guys came down that way that were injured. Those are the guys I helped get out.
But if someone knocks on that hatch, you're not supposed to open it.
Right. It's clogged down. They came down from the air intake.
Uh-huh.
And that's how the blood got on it. I see they were bleeding. One guy was bleeding. So I took him to a place where they could go in the hallway and would go to where their first aid was.
Mm-hmm.
A few guys said, you weren't supposed to do that. Yep.
Those guys' lives depended on it. You were going to do it, huh?
Yeah.
How scary was that to hear all this going on above you, then to see some of the wounded coming down? I mean, were you worried that your ship was going to go down? Were you worried that you were going to get killed?
I wasn't too worried. I don't know why. I just didn't think about it.
Mm-hmm. I know, like you said, that was a long time ago, and you're an 18-year-old kid. But can you help us understand what that felt like, what that moment was like when they tell you Tom died, Tom was killed?
You're shook up. A number of things enter your mind. And I thought about Tom. I said, the first thing I got to do is see him and find out he's not there.
What kind of guy was he?
Oh, you couldn't beat him. He's one of the best guys I ever met.
Have you ever wondered over the years, ever found yourself thinking, here's what Tom would have done with his life? Here's the kind of person he would have been?
Yeah, he'd been a good farmer. He was smart, very smart.
And there were 123 men killed that day in that attack, almost 200 more wounded. Were there other friends of yours or people that you knew that were killed?
Not on the Saratoga.
What about carrying out that promise that you made to Tom?
I did. Lavada and Tom's girlfriend came to our place, and I'd take a little while before I went and seen him, and I told her more about Tom. I think about it, but I say every day I'm reminded over there with that Kodak.
Yeah, so you've got, right next to your favorite chair, you've got one of those digital picture frames. So it'll rotate through as many pictures as you can stick on there.
Mm-hmm.
And how often does Tom's face come up on there?
It comes up every day.
Every day?
Yeah. In the morning, hi, Tom.
It is his family's fervent belief that on September 23rd, 2020, Ralph Thiessen was able to say, hi, Tom, again, and be reunited with the friend he had lost 75 years earlier. Our thoughts and prayers are with Ralph's wife of 68 years, Noreen, and the entire Thiessen family. It's time for a break, but there's more to come on this special tribute edition of Hometown Heroes, remembering 2 of the more than 16 million Americans who served our country during World War II. We'll be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.